What's up, guys? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, March 6th, 2018. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the busiest lady in the biz, Andrea Renee.
What's good, Tim?
What's good indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We come at you with all the video game news you need to know about. Let me tell you, today is a news-packed day. More news than I think I've ever been on the show for. Maybe there's been a couple episodes that you and Greg have had more, but we have a lot of interesting news stories. Some big, some small. All interesting. You can get the show on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames and watch it live like so many of you are right now, and we appreciate it. Or you can watch it as a VOD at youtube.com/kindafunnygames when it goes live around 2 p.m. Pacific time, or on podcast services around the globe, including now Spotify, which is a really cool big deal, and I'm really proud and happy that we're over there now. And thank you all for your supports over there. You can be part of the show by going to kindafunny.com/KFGD and writing in for the squad up or for the questions or for whatever it is. And if we get anything wrong during the show, you can go to kindafunny.com/you're wrong to keep us honest, and we will do a correction segment at the end of the show. A little bit of housekeeping. We are fewer than 1,000 subscribers away from 230,000 on our main Kind of Funny channel, youtube.com/kindoffunny. If you're into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I highly recommend you go over there and subscribe. The new episode went up today. It was Captain America: The Winter Soldier. Did we rank it number one? Did it beat Avengers? You're gonna have to go over and watch and find out, but the answer is yeah. I'm just gonna let you know right now. The answer is yes. It's a damn good movie. And we are brought to you by MeUndies, but we'll get to that later. For now, let's start with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. I'm actually going to try to commit to the stuff.
Thank you, Tim. Right. I appreciate that.
We have 6 news stories today, Kevin.
A baker's dozen.
Can you hit the stopwatch, too? Thank you. First news story of the day. This comes from my boy Tydux over on Twitter. He DM'd me a little info that he found sitting around the internet. So he was doing some snooping. Tydux, if you don't know, one of the Twitter guys, you should follow him at T-I-D-U-X. It's like Tidus from Final Fantasy X, but with an X at the end. But he goes by Tydux. I got the pronunciation for him to make sure I got it right. He sent me a patent that Sony has filed for backwards compatibility. Let's see what happened here. Mark Cerny is the inventor. The applicant is Sony Interactive Entertainment America. It was filed on November 2nd, 2015. So a couple years back. The publication date was May 4th, 2017. And this is all on the United States patent page. But it was re-looked at and re-bumped up on February 13th, 2018. And that's where this gets interesting. Is like when normally when we see that type of thing happen, it doesn't guarantee anything's going to happen. But it is a hint that maybe something will. And Tydux wanted to make it clear he's not saying this is going to happen. He just found this and thought it would be an interesting thing to talk about. The patent states backward compatibility testing of software in a mode that disrupts timing. The abstract thing, which I don't know what that means, is a device may be run in a timing testing mode in which the device is configured to disrupt timing of processing that takes place on the one or more processors while running an application with the one or more processors. The application may be tested for errors while the device is running in the timing testing mode. And there's like a whole bunch of stuff that goes through a lot of technical jargon that I don't understand, but essentially it is trying to find out the best ways. It's a patent for the PlayStation 4's architecture to do emulation of backwards compatible games from the other generations, which is very exciting.
Yeah, certainly something the PlayStation community has been asking for quite some time. Obviously, with the success of Xbox One's backwards compatibility program, people who were playing on PlayStation are like, hey, what about my, you know, PS3 and PS2 games? But I'm not sure at this point of the generation if that's the smartest thing for them to do instead of innovating and looking forward to, you know, what new experiences and new games they can bring. But cool. If it happens, it happens. That's awesome. I could think of maybe a handful of games I would want to go back and play. Even with the Xbox One backwards compatibility, I know that there's a lot of gamers out there that really enjoy playing their 360 games, but I have yet to stick a single 360 disc into my Xbox One. So
I want this so bad. I think it's fantastic and it's awesome. I really hope it happens. I hope it's announced at E3. It would be so damn hype. And I just feel like it would just be another huge win for Sony, which I'm always rooting for. I'm rooting for wins for everybody. Microsoft coming out having backwards compatibility a couple years ago was so big. big and such a fuck you that was awesome because it was like nobody thought it could be done. Everyone was saying no, and it was so late into the game that everyone expected it would happen. For them to come out and do it now with the Enhanced for X program, where they're even enhancing backwards compatible games, it's really interesting. And I've talked about this a lot now, but recently getting the Xbox One X and understanding what the backwards compatibility is, because I always assumed it was you need the disc, put it in, but it's like no, you get it's a marketplace. It's the equivalent of PSN last generation when you can buy the PS1 classics and PS2 classics now. But having that library of games available, even if it was drip drop, like kind of coming in virtual console style, it's really exciting to me because I am the nostalgic type of gamer that likes to go back and play older games, especially like the PlayStation 1 and 2 and 3 generations. Like, that's exciting for me. And with my Xbox, I found myself popping in to Perfect Dark just to play for a couple hours and
just
see
what's up.
Just for fun. Fusion Frenzy and like all these old games that it's just kind of neat to have. And granted, it's like we're in an era where we're used to things like Netflix, where it is just about the abundance of choice and just having all the things there, whether or not you watch them or whether or not you play them. It's about having the option to play them if you wanted to. I think that Sony would have this would be a huge deal for them, just in terms of perception and in terms of giving the gamers what they want. It's one of those things like the changing PSN names. Is that really going to change the game if that's announced? No, but it's going to make the community that really cares a little happier.
Well, that's something that's been asked for a very, very long time. I think that would be a bigger deal than backwards compatibility.
You're crazy.
I don't know.
Backwards compatibility, while I don't think is the biggest deal ever in terms of Sony looking at it, I do think the people that want it and care, it's a feature that even if people don't want and aren't actually going to use, mm-hmm. not having it is not a good look, and having it is a great look. And
I agree.
It's one of the few things that Xbox has on Sony that is just like undeniably they are the clear cut winners. And if Sony were
clear cut winners of what?
Of having a feature that the other one doesn't. Like it's total. That's the one thing that they have that it's like the pros and cons list. If you're going down the checks, it's like I feel like you can make arguments of what has the best first party games, what has best online, whatever. It's like that's up to debate. It's not up to debate what has a better backwards compatibility feature list. So I don't know. I hope it's true, and I hope that it's announced at E3. I think that would be really exciting, and I always love the kind of shit talk between the big three, and I feel like that could, imagine Sean Layden talking about that, there'd be a swagger in his voice that I want to hear. And then I want Shuhei to come out and let us change our names.
It's interesting to me, though, that nobody else has picked this story up. So that indicates to me either A, the source material is dead and no one's covering it because it's not happening, or B, it's like flying so far under the radar that no one's noticed, which is hard for me to believe in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. No threads on Reset Era, no anything. But my boy Tidex, man, he's out there. He's
well,
in the
I mean,
ground. He's
can,
searching for this shit.
Yeah,
so.
You can look it up, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's all
there.
Publicly available.
It's there, so. Interesting stuff. Just something to think about. Let us know in the comments below if PlayStation backwards compatibility would be a big deal for you. Would it be a big deal for you, Kev?
Yeah.
Do you know what we're talking about?
Yeah, backwards compatibility.
Okay. There you go. Second news story. This comes from Eurogamer. Sources say Diablo 3 is coming to the Nintendo Switch. Last week, Blizzard set tongues wagging with an apparent tease for a Diablo game on Nintendo Switch. The image of a Diablo nightlight being repeatedly switched on and off felt fairly deliberate. But then, after hours of fan excitement, an official response emerged from within Blizzard, apparently designed to dampen down the flames. Quote, "As of now, we do not have any current plans to announce Diablo for Switch," a spokesperson told us. So what's going on? Well, while Blizzard makes its mind up, Eurogamer sources have told us that yes, the project is very much in production. And as you might expect, the game will be a port of Diablo 3. Our sources could not confirm whether the game's Reaper of Souls and Rise of the Necromancer expansions will be included, but at this point, it would be surprising if they were not. In its earlier statement, pouring cold water on the rumors, Blizzard described the Twitter post as simply, quote, "a fun engagement piece." Eurogamer sources with knowledge of the project told me they were surprised to see it, as the game's reveal remains several months off. We were having a back and forth before the show on whether or not this consists of news. And my thing is, it's not news because it's not a formal announcement, but I will bet everything I know that Diablo 3 is coming to the Nintendo Switch. There's just, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Why would Blizzard specifically come out and say we are not developing Diablo for Switch, and then this source is like, nah, they are, man. They really are.
Why would they post a thing of them with doing the Switch? It's an engagement piece? No, it's a tease, and you damn know it, Diablo. You can't just be doing that shit. That shit has repercussions.
No, I agree. I think that they are mixing the message in a really disingenuous way. I don't like that their PR came out and says, we do not have any current plans to announce Diablo for Switch. So I think now what they're forcing us to do, if someone like Eurogamer, who has very reputable sources,
totally,
is coming forward and saying, our sources say it's in the works. Now we have to go back and like break down word by word what this spokesperson is saying. We do not have any current plans to announce Diablo for Switch.
Which means next week they could make plans.
It's just like, come on, guys.
If we do not see Diablo 3 by the end of this year on the Nintendo Switch, I'm going to be utterly shocked.
And if they are that far along in the port process, why not just say that? Why not just say, we have more to announce on Diablo soon, or we're excited to announce Diablo for Switch, more details soon.
I mean, they put out a picture or a GIF or a video, whatever it was, of the light switch. They're saying something, man.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But the source with knowledge of the product told me they were surprised to see it as the game's reveal remains several months off. That's what's interesting. It sounds like there's just a bunch of different people with different priorities in terms of when the messaging gets out there. And it does sound like that picture might have not been crossed by some of the people that should have been.
Right.
From people I know at Blizzard, I've heard a lot of things recently that are just like, it sounds like there's a lot of stuff that they're working on. And in classic video game fashion, specifically Blizzard fashion, not all of it's going to come to light.
True.
This is the type of thing that I don't think we'd get such a direct tease for if it wasn't actually going to happen and if it wasn't going to be announced. I mean, it is weird getting it in March, like the tease, if they're not going to announce it until E3 or later. When's BlizzCon?
It's usually in the fall, usually October or November.
Yeah, that's a ways away. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
We'll see. But there's been a lot of rumors talking about Nintendo Switch having a really strong third-party lineup for the second half of the year. And I feel like it's not going to be filled with all of the new things. I think it's going to be a lot of older ports.
Well, it has to be older ports because of the technology that the Switch is working with. I did like how you guys talked about Adam Boyes' tweet about Monster Hunter World, how Iron Galaxy is like, we'll port it. give us the job, Capcom.
Yeah.
But we're seeing a lot of games that have been previously released. And I hope that Switch can get to a point where we're seeing more simultaneous day and date releases with new games that are coming out.
I think we will this year. I think that this E3 is kind of going to be the first step out of the gate for that.
Right.
I imagine we'll see a Call of Duty. You know, I imagine we'll see some of the, and whether it's a spin-off version of whatever the next one is, or if it's a port of it,
right,
in some fashion, we'll have to see. But I think with that, with the sports games and with a lot of the other stuff, I think that the general third-party titles, I think that E3 is really going to be where we see what that looks like. But I expect a lot of ports. I expect Diablo 3. I expect Grand Theft Auto 5 at some point. So we'll see how that all goes.
I do want to add one thing to the first story before we move on, mm-hmm, to the next story. While you were reading, I did a little sleuthing and I found an interesting idea, which is something that, you know, we didn't talk about in this Sony backwards compatibility story, how this patent could be for PS5 and doing backwards compatibility for PS4 into PS5.
Mm-hmm.
That to me makes a lot of sense, mm, versus adding PS3 compatibility this far into the PS4 generation. It would make sense to me, like, why wouldn't you want to add it into your brand new system, seeing how, as you very astutely, you know, recognize, that Xbox is doing very well with their backwards, yeah, compatibility program this generation.
Yeah, totally. And that's likely. That makes a lot of sense. But I also do think that if they were to do that, it would go further back than PS4. And I think that, like, we'll have to see what ends up happening. But with Xbox Game Pass doing what it's doing, everyone else has to be looking at it and trying to figure out what their streaming solution is. And I'm not talking about PS Now. I think that having something, once we see what Nintendo's online plans are and what its quote-unquote virtual console is going to look like, I think we're going to see everything trend towards a more Netflix-style execution, even if you have to buy it more piecemeal. And I can imagine PlayStation 5 having a, hey, you can get a lot of games going all back through PlayStation's generations. So, interesting stuff. Next story comes from Ubisoft. Far Cry 5 arcade mode and season pass detailed. The makers of Far Cry 5's map editor are hell-bent on giving the game a long and ridiculous life beyond its single-player campaign. Ubisoft is calling the tool Far Cry Arcade. A new company blog post indicates that it will include approximately 7,000 different objects players can use to create new levels, some of which will be borrowed from Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, as well as previous Far Cries. That's pretty cool. So there will be Midwestern religious fanatics, but also Martians, arachnids, and Yetis. The universe is upon us. Ubiverse. I like that. It's cute. The main series has had map editors going back to Far Cry 2, first introduced in the 2005 spinoff Far Cry Instincts, but nothing this ambitious. In addition to player-created maps accessible directly in the game world, Far Cry Arcade is also supposed to include some new modes, one of which will be called Bounty Hunt, and basically works like an assassination mission where you take out a target and then try to exit the map. More interesting to me, at least, was a Ubisoft-made map the company calls Upside Down, in which players get to explore a surreal map that emphasizes exploration and weird scenes over combat. And of course, the map editor is intended to be the backbone of PvP in Far Cry 5, meaning you'll be able to compete across whatever quirky player-created maps Ubisoft has decided to feature in a given week. A Ubisoft rep also said in an email to Kotaku that Far Cry Arcade will include the exact same feature set across both consoles and PC. Updates will also be simultaneous on PS4, Xbox One, and PC as they become available, which is good news considering that it's not unusual for one to lag behind the other. So they put out two trailers today. One was for arcade mode, going through all that, and the other was going through the season pass stuff, which we've seen before, but then also what people that just have normal, no season pass, just have the game get. As previously detailed, picking up the Far Cry 5 Season Pass will grant you access to three new adventures, Hours of Darkness, Lost on Mars, and Dead Living Zombies. In the first, Hours of Darkness, you'll be thrown into war-ravaged Vietnam and have to fight your way through enemy forces, rescue POWs, and try to evac amidst the chaos. The second, Lost on Mars, will see you traveling to the Red Planet to wield futuristic weaponry in the jetpack-fueled fight against the insidious aliens. And last but not least, Dead Living Zombies places you and a co-op teammate at the whim of a B-movie director who cooks up seven different scenarios that pit you against hordes of undead horrors. And there's more adventure in store for the season pass owners, who will get early access to Far Cry 3 Classic Edition 4 weeks before it becomes available as a standalone purchase. Far Cry 3 Classic features the single player campaign of Far Cry 3, which marks the introduction of the beloved wingsuit into the Far Cry world. And even if you don't have the season pass, you'll get a regular stream of free new stuff for Far Cry 5 right from the get-go through Far Cry Arcade and Far Cry 5 live events. That's a lot of content.
It's awesome.
Very, very awesome. This is kind of an example of what DLC packages should look like, in my opinion, where it's kind of a mix of there's single player stuff, there's multiplayer stuff, and it's giving the community a tool set to create endless variations of whatever they want to do. And paired with Ubisoft themselves committing to constantly using those tool sets to create new modes and new game types for people.
I think this is great. If you're going to spend money on a season pass, this is the kind of offering that you're looking for. And Ubisoft has been pretty diligent in the past about really giving robust offerings with their season pass. If you look at Assassin's Creed Origins and everything that they've done so far with that game, specifically the live events have been really exciting for people who continue to play that game on an ongoing basis. They are bringing live events into Far Cry, they have said. I think that the styling of these individual little pieces looks really fun in a very like Far Cry way. When I saw the trailer looking at Hours of Darkness, I immediately thought of Tropic Thunder. When I saw Lost on Mars, it kind of had like a little bit of a Total Recall feel, yeah, which is very cool. So I'm really looking forward to this. Obviously, Far Cry 5 out in just a couple of weeks. The base game itself is going to be very meaty. All of the Far Cry games have a ton of side content to do. So this is great. It's very much a value added for people who are looking to spend money on maybe one game this spring. And mm-hmm. They're like, well, what should I spend my money on? And Far Cry is saying, spend it on us.
And even without the season pass, it seems like there's a lot of content there with the game itself. And, you know, Ubisoft has a good track record now when it comes to games like this of coming out and working and being good. Jay Tone writes in and says, hello, KFGD show hosts. Ubisoft just released a video detailing Far Cry 5's new arcade mode, allowing players to make and play user-generated content alone or with friends. The reception for it so far is incredible. I see a ton of people saying that they went from a maybe to a day one purchase because of this. I just wanted to compliment Ubisoft's approach to games as a service and wanted to ask you all what your opinion is on these services and their effect on sales.
I think games as a service are something that is successful if it's executed properly and the community feels like they're getting value for their dollar. Mm-hmm. There's been some times when you look at games that are trying to get people to come back week after week and always play that are falling flat. I mean, sadly, Destiny 2 is an example of that. That they are trying to invigorate a community to always be playing their game, but they haven't given enough content to justify people's time to come back to that game every single day, every single week. Now, Ubisoft has really been perfecting their games as service through games like Rainbow Six Siege, games like For Honor, which just got dedicated servers, and games like Ghost Recon Wildlands. And I'm really excited that they're bringing their single player offerings into that as well. And clearly, Far Cry has a PvP element, which is great for everybody who wants that experience. But they're also saying it's not just going to be PvP. It's going to be single player as well. Mm-hmm. And for players like me, that's really exciting.
Definitely. And I think Ubisoft, like you said, Jay, is a good example of what games as a service can be and what a lot of other games should be striving towards. And seeing this, like seeing there's a graphic that came out of all the different content that's being offered for Season Pass and just for free for people that buy Far Cry 5. And it's very impressive. And the live updates that they're going to have for in addition to the arcade, I think it's really cool. I think it's going to be really exciting. And I think that, you know, with the pedigree that Ubisoft has with Far Cry games, like they've kind of been knocking them out of the park. And this looks to be no different. Greg and Andy did a Let's Play of it a couple days ago. I think that's, when's it going live, Kev?
Next week, right?
I think it's next week.
I think it might be this Wednesday.
It might be this Wednesday. Gotcha. So patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to see them play it. They had a blast. Next news story. This comes from Polygon. Witcher developer teases a crossover. CD Projekt Red is teasing the return of Geralt of Rivia, star of the Witcher franchise, but he won't be showing up in one of his own games. Instead, according to a tweet from community lead Marcin Mamo, it sounds like Geralt will be a guest star in a game due out later this year. He tweets, what if Geralt was going to step out of the Witcher game for the very first time to make an appearance in one of the upcoming games later this year? Mamote's obviously playing coy for now. His only reply to the original tweet consists of a thinking emoji, but fans are coming up with their dream crossovers for the Witcher hero, and at least one of them seems plausible. So, the only games that this would make any sense for, just from crossover standpoint, Soul Calibur 6. I think that's the most likely.
Yes.
Makes sense. We, you know, Soul Calibur has a history of having guest characters, whether it's Link and Spawn and Heihachi or Yoda and Starkiller from Star Wars.
And his combat style would fit very nicely mm-hmm. into that gameplay.
So I think that makes a lot of sense. Another thing, Monster Hunter World has been doing a lot of crossover stuff, but it's only really, oh no, I guess Aloy is breaking out of Capcom. But you know, with the Street Fighter stuff, so Monster Hunter World, don't think that's as likely.
I don't foresee them doing that. No, it would be really cool. Mm-hmm. I would love that. I would hunt a bunch of really annoying Angies again to get that armor set. But
and leading some credence to the idea of Soul Calibur 6 is a rumor from Let's Play Video Games, which reports that Bandai Namco, which distributed The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt in Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, would include CD Projekt Red's best-known character in this year's Soul Calibur game. While the publication only cites anonymous sources from several weeks back, CD Projekt Red's tweet today only adds fuel to that fire. So that's looking like the answer. Hopes that Geralt will appear in a new Super Smash Bros. Title. Meanwhile, the definition of wishful thinking. Nintendo hasn't said anything about a new Smash, not to say it won't. Bandai Namco's association with both Smash Wii U and Witcher 3 is enough to get fans excited about the possibility. Not going to happen. But then again, who would have thought Cloud would make it? Who would have thought Bayonetta would make it? Not this guy. Solid Snake? That didn't make any sense. But he was there. That was real. That really happened.
That's true.
Oh, man. Next story comes from Siliconera. Square Enix says it can now develop HD games much faster thanks to Final Fantasy 15.
Well, thank goodness for that.
And let's see. Proof's in the pudding, ladies and gentlemen. So Final Fantasy 15's key developers and director, Hajime Tabata, and game designer Takafumi Terada, and episode Ignis director, Yoichi Kuroda, were featured in this week's issue of Famitsu magazine to talk everything up until now for Final Fantasy 15 and what's to come. Some of the highlights of this interview included, in terms of development deadlines for Final Fantasy 15, Square Enix had over 20 last year. That's insane.
Mm-hmm. That includes all of the stuff, all of the DLC that's coming for this year, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. So it's like they're really committed to this game, porting it over to the PC and all, and the GB edition, Pocket Edition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at least once a month, Square Enix worked on releasing something of consistent quality and no bugs. Thanks to this, Square Enix feels that it gained the technique to develop HD games at an incredibly high speed, and that its staff improved to become tougher and speedier. All right. Incredibly high speed, improved to become tougher and speedier. So we got Kingdom Hearts 3, we got Final Fantasy 7 Remake. What does this mean for those? Is it real? Is it happening?
I think Kingdom Hearts was already so far in the works that their new techniques probably aren't going to affect the ultimate timeline of that game. Mm-hmm. But the Final Fantasy 7 Remake, however, that could be really positive news for people who are anxiously awaiting that, because we don't have any idea of when that's actually coming out.
No. You know, you guys, you know me. I hope this means good news for the games that I love, and the games that I hope for, the games I get hyped for. Do I have any faith in this at all? Not one bit. Not at all. This is... You want to talk about not a news story?
Oh, ye of little faith.
This is not a news story.
Hey, you put it on the rundown.
And then the final news story of the day. This comes from IGN. And boy, things are about to get weird. Limbo, an Inside developer, Playdead, partner with a sex doll manufacturer.
Why not?
Playdead has announced that they're partnering up with IM8Bit and Real Doll for a mystery collector's edition of Inside. The collaboration was unveiled on IM8Bit and includes a PlayStation 4 game disc for Inside, Steam keys for both Inside and Limbo, they'll be emailed after purchase, and, quote, other stuff. IM8Bit cross Playdead cross Real Doll are collaborating on a mysterious collector's edition for Inside. We will not tell you what it is. Maybe it's what you're thinking. Maybe not. We can confirm there are several items included, one of which is the PlayStation 4 game disc. The rest is up for speculation, reads the description. The special edition will ship when it's done, with customers advised not to order it if the vague nature of the shipping date will make them, quote, anxious. The contents will be revealed once the product ships, which is estimated to be in quarter one of 2019. Pre-orders will go live on Thursday, March 8th at 7 a.m. Pacific time. You can order yourself a sexy box of mystery. For $375, if that kind of thing floats your boat. It's a limited run and won't be available after June 8th. Quote, this edition weighs a surprising amount, reads the site.
Oh my God.
Hence associated shipping fees and tariffs. All right. I don't even know what it could be.
I don't think that this game has any reason for a collector's edition so far after the release of the game. I mean, shipping Q1 2019. This game was released June 29th of 2016.
And it was fantastic. An amazing game.
But so old then.
But
by the time the collector's edition comes.
You're getting caught up on the wrong part of this. You're right that it is weird that it's so late. But what's more weird is there's a sex doll.
Or not.
In a game featuring a giant blob.
Or maybe not. We don't know. They're being incredibly vague and ambiguous.
I just, you know, I'm a pretty creative person when it comes to sexy things. And I just can't use my brain power to figure out what this possibly could be.
I kind of don't want to.
Did you play Inside?
No.
There's very few characters. One's a little boy. One's this weird little fish girl. And I mean, Shape of Water has changed things, but I don't think it changed it this much.
Oh my gosh.
We'll have to see. I don't know. Well, it's, you know, 2019 is a long way away, Andrea. But if we want to know what's coming to mom and grop shops today, Where would we look?
You would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Do 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 do.
Yeah!
Good job, Tim.
I did it. Did it for you. Angry commenters. Out today, a shit ton of games. Let's get started. Bacon Man, an adventure on Windows. Bravo Team on PSVR. DJ Max Respect on PlayStation 4. DJ Max franchise. Favorite of mine. Fear Effect Sedna on PS4, Xbox One, Windows, and Switch. Final Fantasy 15 Royal Edition. The game that'll never stop coming out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and finally, Windows PC.
It's got a lot of catching up to do to get that title from Skyrim, okay?
True. Very true. But something tells me they're going to keep trying. They're going to gun for it. Frantix on PlayStation 4, which I don't know what that is, but I'm hoping it's just a story of Fran Mirabella's antics in his day-to-day. Life is Strange Before the Storm on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, the retail edition disc, whatever. Midnight Deluxe, don't know what that is, but it sounds dope, on PlayStation 4 and Vita. North on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and Vita. Rangi on PlayStation VR. Scribblenauts Showdown on PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. Super Seducer on PlayStation 4 and PC. Now, this is a game that obviously I saw on the list, and I'm like, I need to look this up, because what the fuck could that be? And it is somehow creepier than I imagined.
It's the biggest pile of garbage I think I've ever seen.
in video games.
There's some really bad games out there. Clearly, the Steam marketplace has some trash. The iOS and Google Play stores have a lot of trash. Even Nintendo Switch, PS4, and Xbox One have trash in their marketplaces now. But this is like, the thing that really bothers me the most about this game is that they won't stop emailing me press releases about it after I specifically said, I don't want to play your game. I'm not going to talk about your game.
Yeah.
And now I'm fucking talking about their game.
It happens. It's weird because I just don't understand the tone deafness of it, where it's like this. There was a time and place where this game could have come out and been acceptable. That didn't mean it was right, but there, like when you think back to the BMXXXX era,
right,
and things like that, where it's just like, you know what? Anything fucking went. And it just kind of, you know, people were growing and learning. We've grown and learned by right. this point. It's like this is not a game that should be coming out in 2018.
Well, and more importantly, dating sims are not an uncommon type of game. There's quite a few of them that are out on the market, but this really isn't a dating sim in a traditional sense. It's all FMV. And so it's just like, the end goal isn't, like the gameplay of it just doesn't feel fleshed out. It feels just grimy and kind of gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched a video of it. I was just like, good Lord, I can't believe this is real. But
It's created by a self-proclaimed master pickup artist. I think that tells you all you need to know about what this game is.
TT Isle of Man on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Now you might be asking yourself, what is that game? And I don't have the answer for you, but I will tell you that it looks like a MotoGP game by the box art, which I would have not guessed from TT Isle of Man. But you know what? Hey, do you guys. Way of the Passive Fist on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One and PC. Greg Miller played this back at Judges Week before E3 last year, and it looks really cool. It's a game. It's like a 2D beat-em-up game, but you don't beat people up. You just block a lot. It's the Way of the Passive Fist.
Mm.
And it seems pretty cool. It's kind of like a rhythm game mixed with a side-scrolling beat-em-up. Awesome stuff. Operation Chimera, the newest expansion for Rainbow Six Siege, is also out. We got some new dates. State of Decay 2 finally gets a release date. The zombie survival RPG from Undead Labs will release on May 22nd for the Xbox One family of consoles, as well as Windows PC as a Play Anywhere title. It will also be available that day on Xbox Game Pass. Furthermore, Microsoft also confirmed a price point of $29.99 for the Standard Edition and $49.99 for the Ultimate Edition. On the subject of lower than expected price, Microsoft GM of Games Marketing Aaron Greenberg said, "Our goal is to build a long-term relationship with the State of Decay community and to foster deeper experiences with the franchise. We believe State of Decay 2 accomplishes this goal by immersing fans in the ultimate zombie survival fantasy. We want to give more players the opportunity to join in and experience this unique game." Cool.
Cool.
This coupled with the Game Pass, Microsoft's making some really interesting choices with their first party titles, and I think giving State of Decay 2 and Sea of Thieves this treatment is really going to give both those games the best chance at being hits.
I absolutely agree. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Sea of Thieves is picked up by people who are subscribing with Xbox Game Pass versus how many people are buying it at retail or as a standalone. I have to imagine, why wouldn't you just get a Game Pass subscription and play it that way? It's so much cheaper.
It is, but hey, options are good. They're out there for you now. Next new date we got, this comes from the PlayStation blog. We're excited to announce that a limited edition God of War PlayStation 4 Pro bundle will launch alongside the game on April 20th, 2018. This special bundle features a fully customized PS4 Pro console inspired by Kratos' axe, a Leviathan Grey DualShock 4 wireless controller with insignia, a physical copy of God of War, and digital content. This limited edition bundle will be available across the US and Canada for $400. When played on PlayStation 4 Pro with a 4K TV, God of War outputs in a dynamic 4K resolution achieved through a 2160p checkerboard. Players with 1080p HDTVs will also benefit from increased image clarity via super sampling of a higher resolution onto their display. Across all PS4s, God of War also features HDR lighting and a wide color gamut for those with TVs that support HDR. All of that's very exciting news. And also, this PS4 looks awesome.
It does. Finally, good one. I really like the axe design and the etching on the top. I like the gold band across the front, so you can see that. A lot of times I say that part of the box gets neglected in some of these custom consoles. I like the silver controller with the etching on the right hand side and the God of War decal there on the touchpad. Looks nice. Good job.
I'm really excited for it. Keep it up, guys.
And if there's any game that will benefit from the Pro, it would be a God of War, because those games have always looked beautiful.
Technical showpieces.
Absolutely. It's going to be great.
Dad Davis writes in and says, "Dear KFGD hosts, what are your thoughts on the new God of War PS4 Pro? It looks pretty good in my opinion. I'm looking to upgrade to a Pro, but should I hold out hopes for a sweet Spider-Man edition later this year? Love everything you guys do and keep up the great work." You should absolutely wait for a Spider-Man.
You should definitely wait. They're 100% going to do
a Spider-Man edition. Spider-Man and Sony just go hand in hand. They go back so long. Even remember back at the PlayStation 3 when the font was revealed and everyone's like, "That's just the Spider-Man font." That's really weird, but whatever. I'm so excited for that. Next due date, South Park The Fractured Butthole's new DLC is launching later this month, titled From Dusk Till Casa Bonita. The add-on content will be available on March 20th for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. The DLC, priced at $12, will feature a new story campaign and superhero class. And finally, Bomb Slinger, the explosive action maze game from Mode 4, will blast out of early access and onto Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and PC on April 11th, 2018. Travel to the Wild West and start blowing up friends into classic four-player free-for-all mode, or seek revenge on your murderous brother in a solo adventure with procedurally generated levels and character progression. Yeah. And now it's time for reader mail. But first, let me tell you, it's brought to you by MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable? Of course you do. Don't sacrifice style for comfort. Check out MeUndies. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit. Every month they have new and exciting prints, and they arrive at your door in a fun bag. I love them. I've switched over entirely. I threw away all my old underwear. You've heard this a million times, but it's true. Kevin, have you tried these MeUndies yet?
No, because you took the free ones.
You got to do it. You got to go to MeUndies.com/gamesdaily to get 20% off your first pair, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee. Have you done it? I remember we were talking about it.
So I got in when you were doing the Valentine's Day deal with the matching. So I got one for me, one for John. Yeah. And they are very soft, very
fantastic.
Comfortable.
Fantastic. So that's the thing, is I can't speak to the female side of it. But are they as quality as the men's?
Yeah,
are?
So I was worried I wasn't going to like it, because generally when it has that elastic band around it. Mm-hmm. For any woman out there with hips, those are generally our enemies. But it was really well done. Not too tight, very soft.
It must be the Lensing Micromodal. You know what
it
I mean?
Must
it's
be.
A sustainably sourced, naturally soft fiber that starts with beechwood trees and ends with the most amazing fabric you've ever experienced. MeUndies adventurous prints and designs are all limited edition, and new patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. They have exclusive offer for you guys. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase MeUndies, you'll get 20% off and free shipping. So go to MeUndies.com/gamesdaily. That's MeUndies.com/gamesdaily. Could not recommend them more. If you're trying to get a gift for anybody and trying to impress them, underwear is always a good call. MeUndies, the best call. Reader mail time. Logan Hardy writes in, "Hey, Tim and Andrea. So with the recent news of God of War getting previews for the press to play the game, do you think we'll see more of Spidey, i.e. how the open world works and what the gameplay loop and all that stuff is, before E3? Also, with the recent leak of Spyro Trilogy supposedly getting announced in March, what do you think, who do you think will announce that? Activision or PlayStation?
I think we definitely will see something from Spider-Man before E3. I don't imagine them waiting until June to talk about that game. I think we'll see something either in April or early May would be my guess. So hold out hope.
I think we're going to hear about Spider-Man before E3. I do not think we'll get a release date before E3.
That's probably true. Because it seems to me with what we've seen so far with PlayStation announcing dates that they're keeping it relatively close, a very short period, which is good because that way you're less likely to slip if you wait until you know everything's lined up and ready to go. And I think that's best for everybody.
Yeah.
Delays aren't fun for anybody. Regarding Spyro, I have to imagine that we would see that either... We would see that probably the only place we would see it on stage at E3 would be on PlayStation's stage.
Yeah, if it's at E3, it'd be PlayStation. But the rumors are saying March for the Spyro reveal, which in that case, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I don't know. The rumors are saying it's another Sony-involved project. So if that's the case, PlayStation blog, I think, would be the place that this comes out first with some fun trailer. There was a weird thing that happened yesterday where there was patch notes added for Crash Insane Trilogy that added in the functionality in the original Crash game, I think it was Crash 3, there was a sequence of buttons that you can put in that would unlock a Spyro demo. And when you did that sequence in Insane Trilogy, it just made a fun little sound. It didn't actually do anything.
Unlock anything.
But it looked like some patch notes I was seeing looks like it that is adding something. But I don't think I don't know the legitimacy of all that, and I don't want to get too excited because you know how I get.
That would be a really fun tie-in.
It would. So I don't know if it'd be Activision or Sony. How did Activision? They just kind of just do the normal press stuff where it's just an email, right? They don't have like a hub.
No, I mean they release trailers on their individual YouTube accounts, but they don't have like an Xbox press wire, for example. But we're seeing more and more publishers not wait for tentpole events like E3 and just kind of deciding to announce whenever they're ready, whenever they want to.
The rumors are saying that it's going to be a year-long exclusivity on Sony platforms for Spyro. So I can imagine them trying to get Activision wanting to get it out as soon as possible to like get that moving. And I feel like that will be semi-confirmed once we hit the year mark for Crash Insane Trilogy and seeing if that gets ported everywhere, because there's been so many rumors showing it on Xbox and Switch that
I mean, why not? Why wouldn't they?
I know. Yeah. So it's like, and they've been so weird since day one of is it exclusive or not? And everyone's always like, it's on the PlayStation. It's like, that's not what we're asking you. I'm hyped. I hope Spyro comes back. I hope Crash keeps going. It's a good time to be alive. The Solidest Snake says, hey, Tim and Andrea, I'm a GameStop manager and recently got my yearly sales plan and saw something interesting. With Sony announcing God of War for April and Detroit for May, then why are my sales numbers for June greater than both of those months by more than 10,000 with no games confirmed for that month? Only thing that makes sense to me, Spider-Man confirmed. Hey, Andrea, nice dress. It's an old GameStop TV gag. Are you familiar with that?
Well, I had a very interesting assortment of outfits that I would wear on GameStop TV.
I like that.
I don't know if this is Spider-Man confirmed. I feel like Spider-Man is going to be coming in the fall, like early fall, September, maybe. That feels right to me. I would say in June, potentially there's something else that hasn't been announced that's going to be in that month.
Yeah. I don't know. My money was
on... What about Days Gone? You think that could surprise an out release in June?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
My thing was I was fairly certain that Spider-Man was going to be June, was going to be that like week of E3 title that Sony loves doing all the time with the, like Last of Us and things like that. But now that we know where Detroit is, it's like, and God of War... I'm like, all right, Spider-Man's probably a little farther than that. But what would be coming in June? I don't know. Something that's a big enough deal to raise the money even higher than God of War.
Crackdown?
Womp womp. Massive Score writes in and says, Capcom reported that the 7.5 million copies of Monster Hunter World sold made it the best-selling game in the company's history. This sounded off to me, so I did some digging. Resident Evil 5 has sold 11.6 million copies. That includes the PS4 and Xbox One ports, but that only accounts for 1 million units sold. This leads me to believe that Monster Hunter World being the best-selling Capcom game is due to some technicality I'm not aware of. It seems odd to me that a game that's doing as well as Monster Hunter World needs hashtag fake news from its publisher to make it seem even more impressive. What reason do you think is behind a decision like this?
I'm with you. When that number came out, I said to myself, that can't possibly be accurate. How is Monster Hunter the best-selling game in Capcom's history? Mm-hmm. Fastest-selling, I absolutely would believe. Best, most titles or most copies mm-hmm. doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right.
Seems too low. That number seems too low.
Definitely. And we looked
impressive,
at some numbers yesterday.
But low.
And it does get right. And it gets weird with the ports and like when there's the new versions of it coming out. But those weren't like remastered editions. Those were just straight ports. So
I don't know if Capcom is counting the ports as part of the total units sold, though.
Yeah.
Because to them, internally, it's a different SKU. Like it's a different barcode on a box somewhere. So in their internal spreadsheets, it probably looks like it's a different unit. And so when you look at the raw numbers, maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah, it's just weird. And especially because he's saying that this includes the PS4 and Xbox One ports, but that only accounts for 1 million units. So that would still bring it to 10.6 million, which is more. I don't know. I want to get to the bottom of this because it's fishy to me and I don't trust it. Mike from Buffalo writes in and says, I've never played any previous God of War title. Should I, in preparation for the upcoming installment? I've had God of War 3 downloaded for months back when I picked it up for $5, and I want to play it prior to the new release, but given how surprised everyone sounds about how different the storytelling appears to be in 4, I wondered if playing an older title would somehow taint, probably the wrong word choice, my first experience of playing the series. Note, if you feel like expanding on the topic, has there ever been a game in a series you thought, well, there's no going back now because of how drastically different a newer installment had been compared to a previous game in the series? Thank you for all you guys and gals do. I don't think you're going to need to play the previous God of War games to appreciate this game and to get everything from it.
Definitely
I do
not.
Think if you play them, there will be the little Easter eggs for you and the mythology. And
it'll be more immersive.
Absolutely. It'll give you like a more of an experience. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better of an experience, though. So I would say, hold off. You don't need to. If anything, if you like this one so much, then you should go back and play those. At E3, when I was talking to Corey, the director of the game, he was talking about how they're really trying to focus this game to be a good jump on point for people that have never played before, as shown by the name of it, just God of War. And that there will be a lot of like little things and messages and knickknacks and stuff that people recognize from the other games, but that's not going to be a driving force. And there's not going to be like a big reveal that you're like, oh man, I don't know who that is because I didn't play the other games.
You can also go to your favorite wiki and read a synopsis of what happened as well if you don't have time to go back and play all of the God of War games. But I agree. I don't think you need to play. I mm-hmm. think it looks great. I think they've done enough to advance the series that you could just start here.
Yeah. In terms of other franchises that you've gone too far not playing and they're so different than the other ones, I don't know that I have any great examples of that.
I think Assassin's Creed is a good example of that. They've changed the styling of that game pretty dramatically over the course of that franchise. I think if you're trying to go back to play like one of my favorite games, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, or even Assassin's Creed 2, which mm-hmm. is, you know, lauded by a lot of fans as the best in the franchise, they would play so much differently than what Assassin's Creed Origins plays like, because they took so many leaps with the development in the mechanics of the new installment. So that's like one example off the top of my head of a recent game that I think would be difficult.
Are you saying that like you can jump into Assassin's Creed Origins and not play any other Assassin's
Absolutely.
Creed games?
Yeah. I mean, it's also the origin story, right? So it's the first one. You don't really need to know anything. It helps, obviously, with all of the present day stuff to kind of have some background on first civilization and like Desmond Miles and what came before, but not necessary at all.
This is a great segue into Connor's question. Hey, Tim and Andrea, this is less a question, more of a huge thank you to Andrea. For months, she's been flying the banner for Assassin's Creed Origins, saying how great it was and even a contender for her Game of the Year last year. I've been really intrigued by the game since it was announced, but have been turned off to the Assassin's Creed franchise since Black Flag. However, her consistent message of positivity regarding Origins stuck in my head, and I finally picked it up a couple weeks ago while it was on sale, and while I'm only 15 to 20 hours in, the verdict is that I really dig it. I've had open world fatigue for some time, but this game does it so well, and I'm so happy that Ubisoft nailed this installment with a great world, beautiful design, and an interesting narrative. So thank you, Andrea, for your honest and vocal take on the game. I really don't think I would have given it a chance if not for your recommendation. Thank you, guys and gals. Sorry for the lengthy letter.
You're welcome, Connor. I'm glad you're liking it. It's fun.
And then the final question of the day comes from William H. He says, hey, y'all, have you ever been relieved to find out that the next big game is not your thing? Thanks to your coverage and coverage of others, I quickly realized that Monster Hunter World was a game I could skip because I could see it wasn't the kind of game I needed right now. And that's really liberating. In addition to pocketing the cost of a new game, I've gotten plenty of time to revisit games I like and to make some progress on my backlog. Example, I'm finally playing Hyper Light Drifter and I'm loving it. Have you ever found yourself in a similar situation? Keep up the great work. All the time, all day, every day. This is the Tim Getty story in a nutshell. Destiny 2 comes and goes. Monster Hunter World's coming and going. I'm totally fine with it. I know the games I like, and I'm fine with that. One day, am I going to play these and realize that I've been missing out on some great experiences? I'm sure. But it's okay that I'm missing out on them. I'm totally fine with that.
There's just too much to play.
Mm-hmm.
Too many games. You can't play them all. Some gotta get sacrificed.
Amen. Now it's time to squad up. Our boy Dan needs some help. He's playing on the PlayStation 4. You can go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD if you need some help squatting up in the game. Dan says, I know the name kind of sucks. Shuhei has abandoned us to our bad names. His name is Dan872LS. It's a bad name. Dan872LS. I just got Monster Hunter, and so far I have no friends to hunt with. I'd love to find a crew of best friends to take down some monsters with and maybe teach me a few things while we're at it. If you want to teach Dan some things, Dan872LS on PSN. Do it. Andrew, now it's time for You're Wrong.
All right.
If people went to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and told us that we got things wrong, what did we get wrong today?
Today, let's see here. People are writing in about the patent. And then Kebab says, never mind, ignore. Clumsiest contributor at your service. All right.
I feel good about today. I feel real good.
Lord of Pwn says, Andrea was wrong. Blizzard never said they were not developing Diablo 3 for Switch. They only said they have nothing to announce. Wait, we went over that.
We did. It's happening.
Okay, continuing on. This one looks like it's editorializing and is not a You're Wrong. It's about the patent, so we're just going to skip that one. Unless you want to hear it.
I mean, let's give it to the kids.
Arvel. Crined? Arvel Crined. Hi, computer scientist here speaking. I was looking through the Mark Cerny patent myself right now, and to me it sounds more of a PS4 Pro backwards compatibility, or as Andrea later stated, possible PS4 PS5. The main idea is that if a game has been developed specifically for an older platform and is running on a newer, faster hardware, then some optimizations for the old architecture may lead to errors and bugs on the faster hardware. Remember, the PS3 had an entirely different hardware architecture, while the PS4 Pro has the same architecture but bigger and faster. This is where the patent comes in, as it states that they would reduce the timing of the system clock in order to achieve backwards compatibility in order to get rid of the appearing errors. In a second patent that appeared, they also introduced a spoof clock that emulates the lower frequency of the elder processor clock. A PS3 PS4 backwards compatibility patent would probably reference the differences in the hardware architecture, which is not the case in this patent.
He said the word spoof and I liked it.
He did.
Thanks for that.
Kebab says TT Isle of Man is based on a motorcycle event where they do time trials around the Isle of Man in the United Kingdom. TT, hence time trial.
Okay.
Oi, yeah. Governor.
Oy.
It will next be held in 79 days.
Wow. 10 more days till that's exciting.
And Lord of Pwn contributes, it's a pretty grueling event.
Isle of Man.
All right. Griswold Diablo says, side note to the Inside and Limbo partnership with Real Doll. Ashley Birch predicted this back on March 6, 2017 when she released this video. She asked for Freaky Sex Game and got Inside. And at the end, when it went at the end, when it's a ball of naked humans. Is there a ball of naked humans at the end of Inside?
Yeah, there. Yeah.
So maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Is that it?
Gross. Okay. Orpheus says, hey, Tim and Andrea, not really you're wrong, but more of an addition. It's not just the physical version of Life is Strange coming out today. Those who already have it digitally get the final farewell episode today. Mm. It's the one where you play as Max one more time with when her and Chloe were still friends when they were kids.
Okay. Shout out to Max.
They sent me a really lovely little physical collector's box. Edition. Yeah, I tweeted about it if you want to check it out. Another thing about the Isle of Man. Ignacio Rojas says, Tim, you missed the news that Final Fantasy 15 Royal Edition will include a, quote, big new scene to the final act.
Okay. Somehow I overlooked that.
Maybe intentionally, maybe not. Okay, I guess this is true. Kay Ballou says, I listened to the show on demand, so I couldn't write in last Friday when discussing the new show schedule. Andrea said at the beginning of Friday's show that she's only been on KFGD on Friday one time previously and co-hosted that appearance with Tim. However, Friday, March 2nd was her sixth Friday appearance. My bad. I've been on the show a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Friday, June 23rd, I co-hosted with Greg. Friday, June 30th, I co-hosted with Tim on Tim's birthday. Yeah. On August 4th, I co-hosted with Greg. On Friday, September 8th, I co-hosted with Greg. On January 19th, I co-hosted with Greg. And then last Friday, I co-hosted with Greg.
There you go.
Thank you for the unofficial KFGD historian, Kenny. You got me. I guess I've hosted on Friday a lot. They all just run together. I have so much fun here. Time flies.
It does.
Another thing. This is kind of interesting. Steffmeister says, a bit more info regarding the Isle of Man. The circuit is 37.73 miles long and it takes place on public roads with speeds at 200 miles per hour and it's considered one of the most dangerous races on the planet with 256 riders have been killed during the race since the first race started in 1907.
Well, now you too can experience it because it's out today in video game form.
That's horrifying that many people have died. That's dangerous. Don't do it then. Don't race it. It's not worth it. In case you missed it, Ignacio Rojas says, the ESA has received a formal invitation from Trump to discuss violence in video games. The meeting is scheduled for Thursday, March 8th.
Interesting.
I'm glad the ESA is going. All right. What do we have here? Lord of Pwns says, regarding Spyro, I think what Tim is thinking of is recently people have data mined the Insane Trilogy and have found code for a Spyro demo call-out.
Yes, that was what I was talking about.
That was essentially what you were saying, right?
But yeah, I said patch. It wasn't a patch. It was data mining.
Okay. Kebab says, when I did the expanded info in the You're Wrong yesterday, the Monster Hunter World number to me meant... to mean for a single produced platform. For example, the SNES port of Street Fighter 2 comes in third when Resident Evil 5 came in number one. It discounted PC sales because that was ported after the console release. If you go by all releases ever, Street Fighter 2 easily takes the title at 19.2 million copies sold.
Yeah.
That is, yeah. I'm going to have to email. Let me email Capcom about this.
Yeah, we're going to get to the bottom
and get some clarification on what that Capcom? On what that number means. And lastly,
yes,
it's the same data mine Spyro.
Then
thing.
We're good.
Ethan PR, thank you for writing in, but
ladies and
gentlemen, you got usurped.
This has been a beautiful kind of funny games daily. Tomorrow is Witta Wednesday. Gary Witta, Greg Miller, get hyped. It's going to be fantastic. Until next time, I love you.